You're listening to Sphera Now, a podcast for environmental health, safety, and quality professionals around the globe. This is brought to you by Sphera, the largest global provider of integrated risk management software and information services with a focus on environmental health and safety, operational risk, and product stewardship. Now, let's get started.
Welcome to the Sphera Now podcast. I'm James Tarani, Spark Magazine's editor-in-chief. We're sure you want to stay awake for this one. We're talking with safety consultant and author Phil LaDuke about fatigue and safety. Thanks for joining me today. Hey, Phil, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm feeling less fatigued than I have the last couple of weeks. I inadvertently did some in-depth research on fatigue, working production safety consultant on a movie after doing several other projects. So putting in the long hours that cause fatigue.
Oh, can you tell us what movie that is?
I really can't, but it is a major theatrical, two back-to-back movies, so major theatrical releases, which will be, when they announce it, I can announce it. But A-list directors and A-list celebrities, which always makes things a little more difficult just because the pressure everyone feels to not make waves and upset anybody.
Sure, sure. I almost feel like it was ironic because this morning we had this big storm roll through by our house. So I woke up at maybe 2 a.m. and I had the hardest time falling back asleep. And then I check my email, and there's a trailer in it for the movie Dr. Sleep movie, which is based on the Stephen King book. And then I'm like, we're talking fatigue in a few hours. This is all coming together. It's almost kismic.
Yeah, sure sounds like it.
All right, Phil. So before we get into more about fatigue, tell us a little bit about you and your background.
Well, as you noted, I'm a principal consultant in a global firm in the area of organizational development around health and safety. My job is very diverse, everything from motion picture production safety consulting to doing heavy research in safety. Spent the morning interviewing CEOs of maritime companies in Norway. So I actually came from a background of organizational development and change, and was brought kicking and screaming, almost literally, into the world of safety. My position was, I'm in the change business, and safety and HR are in the keeping everything the same business. Mm-hmm. You introduce variation to a process, you introduce risk. You introduce risk, you increase the chance of injury. And I understand that, but sometimes you have to change things because you've been doing them for over 100 years the same way, and you really need to change it up.
Sure.
So I was head of global organizational development training, pulling, when we'd acquire a business, it was my job to make sure that their cultures meshed. We would call it a process of harmonizing. So instead of standardizing things, which everyone hates unless you're standardizing against them, mm-hmm. we'd harmonize. We'd say, here are four things that your program must contain. You want to add to that? God bless you. But you have to have these four things.
So it's breaking down those silos.
Exactly. Breaking down the silos, getting people to speak the same language, share the same values, et cetera. Very rewarding work, but also very exhausting work. I mean, very emotionally exhausting. Worked, that company was being sold, so I moved into safety. Right? They kept calling me up, ex-coworkers saying, we need you. This isn't your average safety business. This is cultural change. And that was the first of many times I heard culture and safety used in the same sentence. And I got to tell you, now I'm just sick to death of it. most people don't know what that means. Yeah. And, it's a little insulting when you've spent 15 years working in a field that you went to school for, and now everybody and their brother thinks they can do it.
Yeah. For
and
sure.
They just call what they're doing, whatever that is. So, yeah, I'm a bitter, angry little man when it comes down to it. But,
all right.
So, So ultimately, you know, I started off as a kid, 18, writing for the local newspaper, found that my writing skills were slipping, and we implemented a program the company I worked with called A Write or Die was our working title for it. But And I was told I had to start a blog, which I've always considered self-indulgent crap that can't get published. I've grown to respect it now because it's become more respectable. But did that from 2006 on, and I just published my 100th article in 6 weeks for Authority Magazine, and got two books out, of course. Thank you. Two books out. I Know My Shoes Are Untied, Mind Your Own Business, about all the ridiculous things that safety people sometimes tell us. Mm. And Lone Gunman, rewriting the handbook on workplace violence prevention. And
very pressing issues.
Yeah, very pressing. My publisher came to me with that and kind of side-railed my second book in favor of this one. So it became a passion project, although it hadn't started out that way.
Well, you got a lot going on there, Phil.
I was
going
to say, that's more than anybody wants to know about me. So,
well, thank you for that background. We're talking fatigue here, and I was kind of thinking back when I was prepping for this interview. I had a job many, many years ago where I was working. I think it was from like a 3 to 11 shift, and there was a guy who would come in when I was leaving about 11:30, whatever it was. And he was coming from his previous job. So he was basically working 16-hour days. And I found this stat on the census website saying, in this country alone, there's 13 million people who have more than one job. So there's got to be a lot of fatigue involved in that, I would think.
Yeah, there absolutely is. And it's a much larger problem than people think. There are pundits out there, you know, extolling the, we've got the best jobs numbers of all time. But when you have to work two jobs to live a subsistence living, then it's not really good news in the job market. And let's start with this, clearing up this misconception.
Sure.
I don't think you have it, but I think many people listening may. Fatigue is not being tired. Fatigue is where you take either your body, your spirit, or your mind, and you drive it to the breaking point. That is really dangerous, because if you get chronically fatigued, only medical intervention will help you. It's not like a lot of us think, where we say, boy, I am dog tired. It's that feeling you get where you're almost sleepwalking through life and you're aching to the bone, and that can cause everything from headaches and dizziness, the kind of things you associate with overwork, you know, sore, aching muscles, that, to poor concentration, blurry vision, hallucinations. You'll actually, and I don't want anybody thinking, you know, I'm saying you'll see pink elephants, but if you've ever had that sensation where you think you see something out of the corner of your eye and you turn and there's nothing there, that's the kind of hallucinations we're talking about. We also have the reduced ability to pay attention and a reduced ability to focus on something.
Sure.
Add to that impaired high hand-eye coordination and poor decision-making, and you've got somebody typically just waiting for an accident to happen. Now, you mentioned a person that was working two jobs.
Right. He was a valet, so he was parking people's cars.
Well, I had a person when I was working in organizational development. We had a new plant, and the person was working at I won't name the company, but a warehouse that is known for speedy delivery of products.
Mm-hmm.
And he was working 12 hours there, and he was working 10 hours at our place assembling vans. So you figure that is 22 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
He literally slept in his car for 2 hours. And eventually we had to let him go. And the reason we let him go was not for poor performance. we let him go because we didn't believe that it was healthy for him to do that. We said, you know, you're either going to snap mentally or physically or emotionally, and we don't want that to happen. So for your own good, we're letting you go. And he was. And he was an exceptional worker. But
how did he take that?
Pretty well.
Actually, was it more like a relief for him?
Yes, because he knew that he could not sustain that pace. And there's a lot of people out there that we know that it doesn't seem like that big a deal. When I was in my teens, I was working from the time I was 13 till the time I was 18, I was working routinely three jobs. But they weren't three full-time jobs.
Sure.
They were more what we're calling today, you know, side hacks or life hacks or what have you.
That's very millennial.
Side hustles.
Yeah.
Side hustles, I guess you'd call them. Well, yeah, it's sad. A lot of people pick on millennials. I'm everything but a millennial, but millennials are being forced to do what we're calling side hustles. They're being forced to become entrepreneurs because the mindset for so long has been chew the workers up and spit them out. Mm-hmm. And there's just not enough workers for them, for employers to have that mentality. And
well, there's also a lot more millennials than there are boomers, for example.
Yes. Yes, there are. And the boomers stayed in the workforce much longer than anyone anticipated because, you know, they would retire and take a job that was typically done by a teenager, you know, working at McDonald's, working at a Walmart as a greeter, things like this. I'm not saying that the elderly don't have a place in society, but when people are hurting for a job, as my late father used to say, he retired because there were young people who needed jobs, and he had his house paid off, and it was time for him to retire and let them have a job.
Sure.
And I've always, that stuck with me, and I thought that's a great attitude to have.
Yeah.
It's more of a, he was the kind of guy who saw the big picture of society and said, you know, we got to do something here.
Yeah. And so I want to read you something I found from the National Safety Council and just get your thoughts on it. It says, the fatigue of one person can have a rippling effect. Fatigue workers' productivity has cost employers between $1,200 and $3,100 per employee annually, especially if that employee has untreated sleep problems. Now, what do you think about that? Does that sound reasonable, or how are they coming up with those numbers?
Well, not to disparage the National Safety Council, but I've often asked, how do they come up with those numbers? Mm-hmm. It's a dangerous, because it certainly sounds correct.
Right.
But they use a lot of multipliers and things like that. But let's cut to the chase here. Fatigued workers create problems from being grouchy, you know, having violent episodes in some cases, depression. They miss more work. And when you're already working your workers 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, that has a strain. I mean, when people miss work, does it matter really how much money it's costing us? Because I think it's costing far more in the human cost.
Right. It's definitely an operational risk if somebody's calling in sick and somebody else has to do their job who might not be as qualified to do that job. It offers
who's also fatigued.
Sure.
You know, I mean, you've got somebody who's fatigued, and now you're giving them a job that requires them to really think, and they have trouble concentrating.
All right, so go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think we should get to the meat of this discussion. So what can companies do here to help their workers and help decrease the risk from fatigue?
Well, the risk of sounding like a 1930s socialist, the first thing they can do is stop working their workers to death. They can acknowledge that what they're doing is killing people. And many companies are now investing in resiliency programs. If fatigue is your body, mind, and spirit being taxed to their limits, resilience is the opposite. Resilience is building strength in body and mind to quickly recover from a trauma,
sure,
whether that be pushed to the limit or whatever. It can be built, and it is the most effective way to combat worker fatigue. So let's talk a little bit about what exactly that means. What, sure, can they do? One, they can implement an employee assistance program. Many of the stuff that is the most severe fatigue is the emotional fatigue. You're worried about paying your kids' tuition. You're worried about paying the mortgage. You're worried about those external factors.
Mm-hmm.
And an employee assistant program is very effective in having a place where people can call anonymously and get help. Because when people are pushed that brink, they will know that they need help. An excuse, now these were very popular in the 1980s, and the excuse people used for getting rid of them was they cost too much and people really didn't use them. Well, it costs a lot less than killing someone or having someone kill themselves at work. And that's actually happening. People are killing themselves at work or because of work. And we want to stop that, of course.
Definitely.
Here's one that's going to sound like I've got cheese and sawdust in my head, and I'm the warm, fuzzy psychobabblist from the 70s. But studies have shown that allowing a 30-minute nap for every 6 hours worked reduces fatigue and increases productivity. Typically, we see this huge downward trend after 6 hours, trying to do something.
When you say downward, can you explain what you mean by that?
Sure. We start to see the effects of fatigue. We start, okay, to see loss of productivity. We see more mistakes. We see, irritable people. We see inability to work closely and concentrate. So that 30-minute nap refreshes that, kind of resets the clock. So that's one way. Now, that's backed up with science. I don't have the actual study in front of me, but that's been proven to be effective. But if you've got a bunch of old school managers and business owners, they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
Companies like Google, the tech companies, have been pioneers in this, and that's where a lot of the research comes from, especially creative and mentally taxing jobs. A 30-minute nap really helps people to recover.
Okay. And what else?
One is real easy. Maintain an optimistic outlook. I started telling that I just finished my 100th article for Authority Magazine. I write a blog, and I'm a very outspoken critic of a lot of safety. It tends to be very negative. So I started writing for Authority. They reached out to me and asked me to write a couple of things for them. They'd interviewed me. And their charter is to bring positive and inspiring stories through interviews to the public. And I thought, okay, when people who know me hear that, they're like, yeah, you? They sought you out? You're the least person. But what I found is...
Well, a negative times a negative equals a positive, they say.
After two or three of these, I thought, wow, these people really are inspiring, and they're happy. And so optimism is a choice. Years ago, I was working in healthcare, in organizational development. And as you do when you greet people in the morning, you say, how's it going? And I said back to a guy who happened to be the chief financial officer, I said, so far so good, but it's just getting started. And he stopped dead in his tracks and he looked at me very seriously. And he said, make the day. Don't let the day make you.
Hmm.
And I've tried to adopt that into my personal philosophy. We can't control our emotions, but we can control how we react to them. So maintaining an optimistic outlook is key. Next, get in shape. As I said, I do movie production. I tell people everyone wants to work in the movies. I tell them, you don't see fat people working these things. Get in shape. And if you think you're in shape, get in better shape. And something as simple as taking your lunch break and using a portion of it. I don't expect everyone to use their entire lunch break for this, but take 10 minutes. Walk around the building. It helps to build this resilience. Build a support network where you can say, you talk about your problems and say, I'm really having issues at home, or boy, I'm really starting to feel wrung out at the thing we're doing. Just verbalizing what you're feeling
So you're talking about the employees, not management getting involved in this kind of thing.
Yes. Well, it certainly wouldn't hurt for management to talk about their problems as well. It doesn't have to cross the, you don't have to have these artificial management hourly type of lines here to have a group of people who meet. And it can be something as simple as a book club where they, you know, they read something that's an uplifting story and they sit around and talk about it, but also where they can, somebody you can go to and talk to about your problems. One of the big things is stay away from, I didn't coin the phrase, but I like it, mental junk food.
What is mental junk food?
Well, mental junk food is when you stick your nose in your phone and you're reading a bunch of stuff that's negative. They're pro or con your political beliefs, and pretty soon you're just feeling awful about yourself because you've been ingesting mentally the equivalent of junk food. Also, stay away from actual junk food. Take a look at the vending machines that we have these people working. They don't have time to go out and buy lunch, and they don't have time to stay home and make a nutritious lunch. And they've got just absolute poison in the machine. And this is from a guy who ate a bag of jalapeno potato chips for breakfast. So I'm not telling people that every day you have to eat and, you know, think and purify your soul. We all deserve a little treat once in a while, but yeah, make these habits.
An apple and a day keeps the fatigue away, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, the idea of making these habits and making the little treats, the skip in your exercise, your walk once every 2 weeks, make that the exception, not the rule.
Great.
One I love, and it sounds very metaphysical, but it's very powerful. I try to practice all these things.
Okay.
I made a commitment to myself when I entered the grown-up work world that I was never going to train or teach someone something that I don't practice. I'm not going to lie to people. But this next one, forgive someone.
Interesting.
I don't care if it's somebody who flipped you off in traffic, or someone that you've got a long-standing grudge, or someone that picked on you when you were in grade school. Take a minute, concentrate on them. And I used to tell people when they'd complain, I would be joking, say, feel the hurt and let it go. But don't carry this stuff around. Forgiving people is a gift you give yourself. It sounds cliched, but it really is something that when you do it, you no longer have to carry that weight.
Sure. It's kind of the whole mindfulness thing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last one also sounds a bit silly. Play. Play is a psychological thing we give up as grown-ups, right? Can't play anymore because we're doing this. I know one company had a ping pong table in their break room, and the people on their lunch or on their breaks would come up and play ping pong.
Yeah.
They didn't have to do anything big as far as, you know, whose rules are that, because people worked out a system that worked for everybody.
Sure.
Of whose turn it was, et cetera. Weight rooms. People have gotten away from having weight rooms. They'll say liability. They'll say no one uses it. It costs too much. But when you're lifting weights, you really, or an aerobics class, whatever, but some sort of mechanism within the company that allows people to physically work out the fatigue. Think of a sponge. And the problem with a sponge is it's saturated.
Mm-hmm.
So it does, it just kind of flops around. You can't, you know, it can't stay, you know, upright. It's just a mess. And the cure for that is to wring it out.
There you go. I really appreciate the conversation. I thought it was fascinating. So thank you for joining me.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks again. We invite you to check out Spark Magazine only at Sphera.com/Spark. And don't forget to check out the other Sphera Now podcasts at Sphera.com/podcasts. Thanks again.
This concludes this episode of Sphera Now. For more content on topics such as these, we encourage you to visit Sphera.com, Sphera.com. While there, feel free to click contact and submit feedback on this podcast or suggest topics you'd like to see us cover. Thank you and have a great rest of your day.